We are back and joined now by Imran Anwar, founder of Imran Net Services in New York, pioneer of internet email in Pakistan, of course a well-known media expert on Pakistan and Southeast Asia and many other areas of the world. Hi, Imran.
Hello, George.
Well, a lot of things to talk about, but because of that, as you and I have said many times, certain key areas of the world fall out of the spotlight, even though they're very important. We are in the media following what is happening in Chechnya in Russia, but it may be because of the campaign and the Fed interest rates and a few other things. It may not be getting the detailed discussion it deserves. I know that Chechenian rebels have, for the most part, fled their capital and managed to escape, and the Russians are now calling up more troops and reservists. They claim they're really going to crack down. They're very serious. Chechens have vowed, or the rebels at least, have vowed a protracted, I think the Wall Street Journal is calling it a protracted hit-and-run war against Russia. This doesn't sound like something that's going to wind down anytime soon. What is your assessment?
I agree, George, and that is not good news for any of the parties involved, both for the rebels as well as for the Russian government, especially for Mr. Putin as he tries to sort of prove his hold on the country and the reins of power as well as the ability to manage a crisis. And even despite using a heavy hand, if it backfires and it's more Russian body bags going back, I believe we will have an escalation problem on both sides.
Let me ask about, and I'm talking now not who's right, who's wrong, and that discussion. We can talk about what's going on and how it should be dealt with and thought about from the world community standpoint, but I'm talking about from the standpoint of the Russians and how they would like to handle this thing, and obviously get it over with as fast as they can. Did they miss a big chance? And more to the point, did they bungle it a bit, allowing all those rebels to get out of the city?
Actually, there's various ways to look at that, George. One could say they bungled an opportunity, and the other is that they couldn't have prevented it. Even if they had gone on the aggressive, almost to the persecution level, rounding up all young men or men above a certain age, the rebels would still have found a way out, because mm-hmm. these are very well... very determined and very well, not trained, but very cohesive as a force, group of people. And they would have gotten away. The core, the people who actually manage, the people who lead, the people who evangelize, and eventually the people who actually go out and drum up support, they would still have gotten away. So, yes, you would have gotten a hold of people who might have sympathized or might have once in a while taken actions maybe out of fear, maybe out of support, maybe out of emotion, but so you would actually have a situation where these people would get punished, which would actually have then further added to the sympathy for the rebels.
So they may have missed an opportunity, but it wasn't so much a case of bungling it, which the Russians have been known to do on occasion in this circumstance, in this situation. But this battle for Grozny was handled probably, if we look at it just pragmatically from a military standpoint, from the Russians' perspective, handled about as well as could be handled?
Absolutely, and let's not forget the fact that the Russians still have to fight against the legacy of their last foray into this region, and things are, no matter how propaganda is handled or how differently media exposure is handled, word is beginning to get back, not just to the West, of course, persecution and potential Russian losses mounting, but word is actually getting back into mainland Russia, and mothers and body bags don't make for a very a good image when you're trying to drum up support for what is supposed to be a short war.
And that, of course, is the pressure on the Russian side. They are fighting a very determined group who feel that they are fighting for their homeland, and the Russians are invaders. But on the other hand, how should we look at this? This is a funny business trying to assess, and I recognize when circumstances go too far, then we start looking at atrocities and judging it that way. But the world manages to deal with war and have some parameters that's inside of what is humane somehow. and justify it at times for whatever the reasons. And one justification that has been made historically is that if some rebel faction is trying to break away from the motherland, I mean, that's what the Civil War was all about here in this country. There must be some legitimacy for a central government to try to prevent that.
Absolutely, George, and that's where it gets tricky. It's a slippery slope when you start discussing it, because no single country in the world, whether it be Russia, the United States, Pakistan, India, or whoever, who can rightly say that they have not personally or individually as an, or as a nation gone after a group of people within their own ranks and populace who have not wanted some level of freedom, and they have not taken aggressive action against them.
And you have to understand, I mean, the fact is that that's the government's responsibility. I mean, you can have large numbers of people, impressively large numbers of people, that represent virtually nothing on the screen in terms of the population. I remember, and I've used this before, 300,000 people marched when Ronald Reagan and Helmut Kohl were talking about putting missiles in Germany. Then they had their elections, and those backing the missiles overwhelmingly won the elections. The opponents got swamped in the elections, even though 300,000 very angry activists showed up to make quite a showing. So the truth is, a fragment of the population can represent quite a few people number-wise, and you still have to deal with what the majority needs.
Right, and what is the International Court of Justice plus the International Union of Mathematicians and the United Nations combined opinion on what percentage constitutes when it becomes a legal freedom fight as opposed to an insurgency or a rebellion? That, obviously, we will never reach.
That's an interesting point. To get it mathematical. What is your feeling, though, about this? This is by the Russian standards, is exactly what I'm saying. This is, trying to break away and declare sovereignty from a nation, and much as was the case when the southern states attempted it, they feel the same way. And they're trying to stop it. On the other hand, clearly the Chechenian rebels feel that they're really not Russian, and that they are being held hostage and captive. Where does the truth lie?
Well, George, if we both knew that, we would not be in this business.
not for long, anyway.
Absolutely, and it's I think what makes our jobs and our choice of hobbies, so to speak, it's more of you have to believe journalism and media has to be more of a hobby for anybody who truly believes in it than a job, so to speak.
Here's what complicates it. You can be right and still be wrong on the moral issue of how you went about dealing with the rebels.
Absolutely. So my take on this is, and I don't want to sound too Machiavellian in case any of my friends or business associates hear this, but in a way, Mr. Putin could really use this to his advantage. Right now, the first impression you get is that if this war goes on too long and the Chechens break away, then and some say that is a foregone conclusion. If it doesn't happen this year, it will happen 5 more years from now, etc., etc. It's much like the Irish problem or the Kashmiri problem in India, where it will keep popping up every 5 years. Now, yes, if a lot of Russians get killed, or he attacks and kills lots of Chechens, or loses support in the West, or Chechnya breaks away, all of these are lose-lose scenarios for him. However, if he can contain the rebels in a status quo situation where the impression is that he is being firm as a leader, saving the motherland, yet not causing undue loss of blood and violence, so he's not losing Russian soldiers, and he's also not accused by the West of causing too many casualties on the Chechenian side, but continue to maintain the impression of being a firm leader going after the rebels for the Russian voters' sake, he could actually also be in a position to come into power, I should say, is the right way, to be actually officially elected, and then turn around to both the United States, the West, so to speak, and the Chechens, and say, okay, let's make a deal. I do not really want to be killing people, but I also don't want to be breaking up Russia. However, now that I am firmly entrenched, I realize that economic problems, for example, are the bigger issue for my country, and we can work together with some level of autonomy, let's say. But in exchange for this, I will need the Chechens to sign some sort of peace deal and a laying down of arms, for example, mm-hmm. in exchange for certain economic investments, in which, of course, guess what? I need the help from the West.
Let me ask about that. When the obviously, when the Bosnian Muslims were fighting against the Serbs, the problem was they didn't seem to have any weapons and couldn't get them, and there was even the world community was adverse to, you know, giving them weapons, selling them weapons so that they could, you know, fight their own battles. Where is it the Chechens have wound up with so many weapons?
One point I'd like to make is we're assuming how many weapons they have.
Yeah, but it seems they're pretty well armed.
Right. I think it's partly that they have, I dare say, I think they've done a good job of creating a very good impression of how well armed they are.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not at any loss for weapons, but I'm sure everybody would want more.
Well, I imagine so. But right. I mean, but relative to the impression we got from the Bosnian Muslims.
Absolutely.
These folks are heavily armed.
Absolutely. I think this has been, the Chechens have been very well organized, even for a disorganized, very independent sort of fighting force that can disband and recombine at will almost. They've done a great job of showing how much firepower they have, even more so than showing off how well they know how to get from point A to point B and elude any kind of getting caught.
Do they have allies somewhere that would be, I assume, the Middle Eastern Muslims in the Middle East sending them somehow money, weapons, something?
You would definitely find financial support, moral support, and even diplomatic support. The problem with getting weapons from, even from a country like Iran, for example, is that there is a lot of other territory to go through.
Mm-hmm.
Where I believe that they are getting, they knew this was happening, this an impression on my part, there's a feeling on my part, I should say, that when the Russian Empire started falling apart, the Soviet Empire, I should say,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
even at that time, the Chechens began to have an idea that they would be going for something like this. So there was a
They were storing some more. Now let me ask about, obviously the Russians, or whatever's happened with the rebels moving out, and the threats that the rebels have made to keep this protracted hit-and-run war, the fact is that this is, in one way, even though they may have let people get away, that they should, just from a purely military point of view, should have contained. The truth is they are in essence, getting ready to take over Chechnya and Grozny, it appears, at the moment. I mean, certainly the capital city. So what kind of, how does that look? Is that at least a victory as far as the politicians are concerned in Russia?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, as long as they, it would be the kind of situation where I would not even want to culminate in victory before the elections. I would, if I were in their shoes, I would continue this impression of on the verge of victory finally,
yeah.
and use that through the elections, because my fear would be that if I was in their shoes, and yeah, there would be the tendency to finish it off right now. The risk to doing that is one, that you are going to start gloating, or you are going to give the time for the Chechen powers to get together again and to strike at you to prove a point. And having had the four or
right.
6 weeks between the elections and now, to strike back and lose any advantage that you have, even if it's a small strike, and even if 10 or 20 Russian soldiers get killed, the very fact that it happens 2 nights before the election, for example, could backfire. So I would like keep, if I were the Russians, and I know the Russians probably have much more strategic thinking capability than you and I can bring to bear right now, but that is how it could be played out and used to advantage down the road. And this could actually also work for the Chechens if they have in their mindset the ability to be flexible.
Well, if I was a politician in Russia, at least at the moment, I'd want to cover myself, as you say, because things could go sour, but at least at the moment, I would be, and I was trying to maintain public support and so on, I'd be saying, look, we've basically won Grozny. That's now it's just a mop-up action.
Exactly.
And now we're getting ready to take care of the I guess there's a next stage of the offense or something like
right.
that, and that
right.
would be heading for the mountain strongholds and take care of that.
Right, and we'll do that because of the weather and everything. It probably yeah. makes more sense to do that in April.
Right, instead of now.
Absolutely. And
now let me ask about something else. Suppose this thing does go badly for the Russians, and suppose that somehow or another Chechnya winds up with whatever it looks like in terms of diplomacy, winds up with the kind of a victory that gives them a great degree of autonomy. Is this a real make and break? You wonder what the Russians are fighting about. Sometimes you think it's a make or break situation. Does this not act as the catalyst for a lot more trouble? And doesn't Russia see itself kind of recede back to what is really Mother Russia?
That's a valid point, George.
In fact, maybe that's even a good thing. Might be. I know that there are analysts who said if Russia could come to its senses, it would do that, and then kind of turn its face west instead of east in terms of relationships.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, it can almost be let regions like this and Afghanistan and everybody where we tried, we didn't manage, but there's greener pastures literally, actually, on the other side.
Yeah. I mean, the truth is that they have not come into the 20th century in some ways, and certainly not the 21st, in their thinking, because all of the prosperity they want and all of the influence that they crave is in the West.
Absolutely.
If they said the rest of you folks can have whatever relationship with us you want and whatever autonomy you want, we're Russia, we're a, you don't say it out loud, but we're a Western country, we want to be part of ultimately maybe the EU and certainly the World Trade Organization and certainly the G7, make the G8 and all of that.
Absolutely.
And that's where the money is.
Go where the money is. Yeah. Show me the money. And this can actually play to everybody's advantage. And I think if given the right, not even the resources, it's not even that mm-hmm. there has to be some shuttle diplomacy or something, even if the right hints are dropped at the level of the Chechenian leadership and the Russian leadership, that it's in the long run, it's not so much as an insidious let's divide regions and countries and whatnot for business or economic purposes, but say that it all works together because let's say the Russians want to move to the European Union standard of living or whatever for people in Chechnya and especially war-torn countries like Chechnya and even the Russians around them. They're even further behind because of the fact that they were not very well developed thanks to the Soviet Empire in the first place.
Right, yeah.
So to them it could be, okay, let's build up to where the Russians were, while the Russians are emulating, let's say, the better off Eastern European countries, which are trying to be more like the Western European countries.
Well, sometimes it makes sense. You fight for your life, you fight for economic prosperity, you fight for your share of the pie, you fight for whatever it is you think you have coming, even if you don't deserve it. But it seems to me that this thinking is still left over from the Soviet Union days. This thinking is still left over from past times in Russia. And they haven't really, this gentleman Putin rose to power and popularity in many ways because of his support to be so tough in this war. And I think all of that thinking takes them in the wrong direction. And if they resolve this through military conflict and actually suppress the Chechnyans, as you say, they're never going to really have a comfortable situation there, but they may just control it. This takes them 10 years out of their way.
Absolutely. Control and containment would be my policy at this stage, while using a message of civility and economic welfare and economic improvement to the West and leverage whatever they can out of the promise of the following. If you do not help us now, the problem is that Russia will be in a situation either for economic or political, or just to avoid problems in other regions, it will have to get deeper into this war. And what that means is if it gets deeper into a war, it means the army's role in politics in Russia will continue to be pretty strong. Yeltsin is gone, Mr. Putin is there, but if he doesn't win, for example, and there is a series of wars or skirmishes in regions trying to break away from the mothership, the risk of an army at that stage saying, you know something, we've had enough, we're going to put our foot down, that does not bode well for you in the West, so work with us on this.
Well, let's talk about what all this means to Russia economically and politically, because the World Bank has said recently that it's got a policy change. It's going to take the war in Chechnya into account in dealing with Russia. I assume that's probably a reflection of IMF thinking as well. And and pressure from the rest of the Western world. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, this is a big drain economically on Russia and a big diversion from the kind of things that they really need to get down to business doing. Mm-hmm. Where does this take them if, in fact, the rebels are successful in doing what they are threatening, creating a long and protracted conflict here? What does this mean? What's this mean to the bottom line for Russia?
It helps stay in the red for a lot longer, not just in terms of actual outlays of cash to fight a war, and it's a tough war to win.
Does it threaten economically to destabilize Russia?
Absolutely, because you're talking about a demoralized, ill-trained, and extremely ill-equipped army being sent in to control a region that does not wish to be controlled, where literally freedom and religious freedom in the sense of from Russia as well as religious freedom can give people the energy and the spirit to fight to the death. That's going to be a drain, especially if you vow and you swear and you come through on your word to fight the war and to win it. The physical cash price to pay is extremely high.
Now let me ask about something, because we're almost out of time and I got to get this in, Imran. For most of in my adult life, the U.S. and the U.S. Specifically have kind of been the bad guys in the Mideast because of our support for Israel. And Russia has, in many instances, the Soviet Union has had a better image. What does this do to that? It seems to me at this point that the worm is turning, that the West looks, the U.S. looks better, and Russia is starting to show its true colors in terms of what Eastern Islam might think of it.
Absolutely, George, and that's something we touched upon very briefly in a previous discussion about Syria, that whether we politically, publicly admit it or not, but countries like Hafez Assad, both for their own personal and historic reasons, are looking towards peace for that reason, and also knowing that they're slightly disenfranchised with the Soviets, which to them are still a crumbling power. The crumbling power that is going after their own now. Hafez Assad is not driven by as much by religious issues as for his own family and power issues, but yes, support in countries like Pakistan or countries like around Saudi Arabia, and even eventually with countries like Iran and Iraq will come and benefit the West.
Certainly, you point to the U.S. and our conflict with Muslims was Iraq, and truthfully, sympathy in most of the East was with us, even though they may not say it out loud, because Iraq was feared, and Saddam Hussein was feared and hated.
Absolutely.
But the Chechenian Muslims have a great deal of sympathy. Nobody fears or hates them.
Absolutely, and this will be, if handled well, this can be a great situation where traditional, it's usually the 50 or 100 year old rivalry or hatred, or your enemy, your support for my enemy makes you my enemy kind of relationship.
Right.
Can be turned around faster when a crisis like this is resolved in something which is a win-win situation for everybody.
Well, Imran, thank you for joining us, and you have a great weekend. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Imran Anwar, founder of ImranNet Services in New York, pioneer of Internet email in Pakistan, well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Southeast Asia.